Good afternoon. Welcome to a session. Well, I forgot how we titled it.
Well, I'm just called Some Memories of Early Days Here at Holden, but you said
that's a good title. Let's use that. That's
okay.
We classified it as the old timer of Holden.
The old timer of Holden.
Very good.
That's good. This is for those of you who haven't met, this is Alan Foster. He's from Bellevue. He's retired. Used to be here at Holden and is willing to do some reminiscing with us. He'll just do some sharing and then count on the rest of us to jump in and ask questions if we'd like to find out what things are like. Elmer, it's yours.
Okay. Well, back in June 1937, lots of things were happening here. It was all pointed to a timetable of opening the mill and starting to process ore in April 1938. So they had from June to April to get a lot of stuff done. Trees here in the home site were being felled by the loggers, and they were just started to clear in June 1937. They set up a sawmill up there by just a little bit north of the water wheel, and that was used to saw the logs that came from here into rough lumber for whatever they needed to use it for, probably timber in the mine even. Then the mill foundations were well along. They were getting ready to pour concrete. And you notice that they're massive foundations. The mine was getting ready so that they'd be able to supply ore and supply it in a good supply in April 1938. The road from Lucerne, they'd already started grading the 10% grade, that part that winds back and forth, gets from the lake up to the plateau. They were working on the dock where they were going to load the concentrate. All the workers and miners, most of the miners, lived in tent houses or houses made out of shiplap up here about a block and a half up the road to the right. And they had a central cookhouse, and it was just a rough tent camp. They had started the 110,000 volt power line from Manson all the way here to the mill. And incidentally, one of the interesting things about that power line was that it formed the telephone line as well. They sent telephone messages over that 110,000 volt line. You may be interested in the small role that I had back then. The majority of the University of Washington School of Mines that year already had jobs here. And they were a bunch of big guys that had worked in mines before, and they were all set. They came over here and started working in the mine, but not me. I had taken metallurgy, and that involved the mill. So I came to Chelan, where they had the employment agency, or the employment personnel building, and applied for a job in the mill. And they led me to a man by the name of Mr. Monroe, who looked me over and said, "Okay, you can have a job, but you got to do a lot of odd jobs before the mill opens." And he said, "Go ahead, you can have a job." So I hopped on the Lady of the Lake, came up to Lucerne, and at Lucerne there was an inclined railway that went up from the lake up to the top, about 1,000 feet or so there, and it had a hoist on it, and it had a little skip that they took all the stuff up from the lake in those days and took people as well. And that's why they were having to build the 10% grade, but they used that until they were ready to use the road. And after you got to the top, where the road came over and followed pretty much the same route that it has today, only it was ungraded. It was just a rough road. So, first job they gave me was to dig holes under the stumps out here for the powder man. And after you've done a few of those, you get so you know how to do it with the least amount of work and not run into a root of a stump. And it was a fun job, really. I got along fine with the powder man, and he'd blow those stumps out just a certain time of the day. And we finished that work by July 4th. And then they put me on this road survey crew. And I had the bottom rung of the ladder on that one, I'll tell you, because I was the stake artist. I made the stakes and I drove them in the ground where they told me to. And I got to learn how to sharpen stakes pretty well. But that was one of the best jobs anybody could have, because when at lunchtime, we always took our lunch, and we'd find a shady spot under one of those big trees down along the road somewhere. The four of us would have lunch together. Well, after that, I wanted to back up a tiny bit. The company had imported a man by the name of Mr. Sherman, who was a railroad engineer specialist, to put in that 10% grade down there. And they just let him finish the survey the rest of the road. And as winter approached, they put me up in the mill. And there I had a keen job of making holes in concrete with a star drill by hand for equipment. Brackets and stuff they put on the walls or whatever. And also as a helper, a gopher for the machinery setters, the guys who are setting the machinery. And then the big day came. Let's see, April 4th was about the time the mill started. This is April 4th, 1938. They started operation, and everything seemed to go pretty well. I remember there was about 8 feet of snow along the path as we walked up to the mill to go to work. And in normal operation, you may be interested to know that they were milling about 2,000 tons of ore a day. They ground it up and processed it by flotation. And the ore contained about $3.50 copper and about $3 equal amount in gold, plus some zinc. And their recovery was around 60%, something like that. So after it had been through the mill and concentrated, the concentrate was put in 5-ton buckets and put on trucks and taken to Lucerne and lifted off onto barges. Barges went down to Chelan. From Chelan they went on railroad cars to Tacoma and they smelted it in Tacoma. It was a pretty slick operation, really. You might be interested too in the day-to-day operation of how they kept track of what's going on in the mill. And they had one sampler, a man designated as a sampler, who had to move fast. He ran out to the mill and took a sample of the ground up ore as it went into the flotation machines, and then another sample as it came out, ran back into the assay office, analyzed it real quickly, and reported to the flotation operator how he was doing. And he did that every 2 hours, as I recall. And he had to really move because he had to dry the sample and analyze it as well. So the assayer himself had to form a report that he gave to the mill superintendent every morning as to what how they were doing, what the gold and copper content was. It was a concentrate. Somebody else had kept track of how many tons they'd milled, and they figured out the recovery, and of course then the mine superintendent would go up and tell the general manager how they were doing. And then they'd get into a fight if the mine was giving them bad ore, low-grade ore, there would be argument, why don't you fix that and all that. So that's the way it went from day to day. But one of the most interesting and exciting things that could happen would be a lightning storm. The mill would be going along beautifully, and lightning would come and hit that power line, and it had a mechanism on it to shut down the power immediately. And there they were with all the machinery shut down just like that, without any preparation. And so that mudded up the flotation machines, and it took hours to get the thing going again. So everybody hopped around when that happened. I never told you what I was doing all this time. Well, they put me in the laboratory running miniature flotation tests. We had a little bitty flotation machine about like that. And we were running those tests to see if there was any way we could improve recovery, because every percent that we could do better would be money in the bank. And we had different reagents to check and so forth. So day after day I ran these tests. I don't know how many we run each day, but and I can't really remember whether I ever discovered anything that helped them. But anyway, it was seemed to be necessary, and it was a good job. As far as the everyday life at Holden, it really wasn't bad. We had bowling, we had badminton, we had basketball games in the wintertime, we had movies two or three times a week, the latest movies, and we only had to walk from there a little ways, no traffic problems. And we even had a minstrel show. The big general manager from New York's wife came here and decided she was going to put on a minstrel show. So she put the finger on a number of us to be in that doggone minstrel show. Single fellas like me, like I was, were invited out to dinner a lot. I had friends, lots of friends up at Honeymoon Heights. Incidentally, I might explain my version of Honeymoon Heights. That was a tumble-down bunch of houses and shacks that were left from the original mining camp. And as I said, there were a lot of fellows that came directly from school. As soon as they got a few dollars, they wanted to get married. They had met gals at school and stuff, and it was natural that they wanted to get married. So what did they do? They run out and get married and bring them up to one of these shacks. And I know one guy, all he had was a mattress and a couple of orange crates to start out with. They built those into pretty nice houses, and these friends of mine invited me to dinner one day, and I made that walk up the hill and sat down in their on their davenport, very comfortable, and their appointment was, or our time was supposed to be an early dinner. I didn't see any sign of dinner, not a sign at all. I sat there for a while, and all of a sudden this gal let out a screech. She said, "We invited you to dinner." And they'd already had dinner. So they dragged out the leftovers. And anyway, we were always going on hikes, and for some reason, and I don't really know what it is, all these hikes around here that I see now seem to be a lot longer than they were then. There's one hike that I'd like to recommend, and maybe people here know all about it, but about halfway down the road, you look to the right, to the north, I guess it would be, or is it, would it be that way anyway, south. And there's a big rock slide and a saddle up on the side of the hills there. Right up in there, there's a little lake called Mirror Lake. And you can approach it from this side, or you can go up through past Donkey Lake and up through a park there and drop down on it. And it has had trout in it at that time, and it's the only time I ever caught a trout on a fly. And a bunch of us went up there two or three times, no trail, but once you get to the rock slide, it's just like going on stair steps all the way. And you break over a little hill, and there's the real neat lake in the cul-de-sac there. And a man from Donkey Lake stalked that years and years ago. Things were comfortable here in the wintertime because they had a system of, some guys had a job of getting up early and shoveling out the paths that were to be used from the, we call them the bunk houses or the staff houses and so forth, to the cookhouse. And you didn't have to worry about deep snow. They plowed out the roads immediately, and it wasn't bad at all. Chalet number two, I wanted to tell about, that was what we called the guest house. That was where the VIPs stayed when they came. And it was very necessary to have it because a lot of VIPs came here. They wanted to see how things were going. As I remember, the original investment was somewhere around $3 million in this whole setup. And $3 million back in 1937 was significant. Any new hire that came to get a job other than a miner, an experienced miner, even a mucker, I think, had to start out as a pin setter downstairs, and he only got about 10 cents a line, something like that. But they tested them out to see how bad they wanted the job, I guess. But it wasn't that big a turnover, you see. They had made it quite comfortable. Well, I feel real fortunate and lucky to have had a small part in this exciting development. And I'm really glad to see how Holden today and how well it is, has been prepared and operated and enjoyed. That's it.
Sir, on the day of the cookhouses, was that part of your pay?
Well, they took board and room out.
Oh,
yeah, I remember. I think my original check was $56 for 14 days, and they took about $1.25 a day out for room and board.
How long did the mines operate?
Well, I only stayed here 2.5 years, but it operated for 20 years. And they moved a lot of material through the mill. You could see the tailings. And it would be nice to see the balance sheet, how many tons they milled and how many dollars they put in and how many dollars they got out. I don't know if anybody will ever see that, but it was one of the most successful mines, certainly one of the most successful in Washington State.
Were you just fresh out of college? What age
That's
were you
right.
when you came?
I, the day after I got my diploma, I came over to SLAM. Mm.
About the age of 22?
That's about it.
Could you please explain a little bit about how the flotation process concentration works?
Okay. The Howe Sound Mining Company also had a big copper mine at Britannia, British Columbia. And they worked out a different kind of a flotation process than anybody else had. What it was a big tank, rectangular tank, about 10 feet wide, about 15 feet deep, and about 30 feet long. And across the top it had a manifold, about like that, with a bunch of pipes. I suppose they were 1-inch pipes going to the bottom of the tank. And they had a compressor to furnish a low volume, low pressure air to this manifold. And the ore came in to the flotation machine, to this big tank, mixed with water, and it was all ground up real fine, you know. And reagents were added as it came in, and the air would be forced down these pipes and it would come up as a whole bunch of bubbles. And it would pick up the reagent, and pick up the reagent in turn would cause the bubbles to pick up the ground up mineral and the ground up concentrate, I should say. The concentrate would just kind of ease over the side into a catch trough that would take it down and to the place where they loaded it into the, well, they dewatered it and put it into these buckets. But the flotation process didn't involve any mechanical machines. Some flotation things are sort of like a great big soda maker. But this was just involved introducing air and letting those bubbles rise and pick the good parts up and let the rest, and then the rest went on through. It was a continuous thing. It just, once they got going, it just kept going. Incidentally, they ran those tailings over what we call a blanket plant. They had corduroy blankets on on a small slope, but it would be quite a ways. It would be probably about, blankets are about the length of this room and so wide, and a whole bunch of them. And if there was any free gold in that, those blankets picked it up. And then every once in a while the blanket man would shut off the tailings to that section, and he would wash the blankets real thoroughly with a high pressure jet and wash whatever gold there was down into the concentrates. But I hope I explained your flotation part.
Did you look on the clock? You said it takes hours when the process stops to get the mud out.
Well, you mean if we stop?
If you ran 24 hours a day.
They ran 24 hours, they ran about 6 days a week, and then they shut down one day. But they had planned them. When you planned to shut down, it wasn't so bad. It was when it was a lightning strike, like I said, and that was awful. Because that mud would settle in the bottom. Every one of those pipes had to be pounded, and the air got to come through them again, you know. And they had pipes that they pushed down in there to free the deal. And, of course, all the machines would stop, and they had crushers and ball mills and things like that up ahead of the flotation machines.
Did this room exist in those days?
No.
It was sitting, this is all built.
I think somebody involved with the Holden Village here people must have fixed this. Because this was just
done about 64, 65. I was not sure. This was a bunkhouse, just like
the rest of
them. Oh, yeah. They cleaned this up. An architect from Iowa.
Oh. Where did you sleep? I think it's important that people sleep. Were you sleeping in those?
I got to sleep in your, what do you call it?
Lodge.
Lodge number 2 for a while. And then when I got that great promotion to go up in the mill,
yeah.
I got to go over to the staff house. Oh, I forgot to tell you one story. There was a practical joker here in the camp, too. He was the chief electrician. He had some kind of a deal to settle with my roommate. And we were in the northwest, the northwest? Anyway, the corner room of that staff house, and the window is at ground level. We always kept the window open. There about 2 o'clock in the morning, he threw a chicken in the window. My friend didn't have any farm experience. He quickly got up and put on his zippers. He said, "Hurry up, put on your zippers, that chicken will peck your feet." It made me laugh so hard. Because I had been around chickens, I just picked that chicken up and threw him back out the window. But that guy was scared.
How did the young men meet women? Did they have a way of going?
They had dances every once in a while, but I don't remember them bringing anybody in, really. It was... There were a lot of families lived up in the miners' village, or whatever you want to call it, and they came here, and there weren't that many miners, I guess, that liked to go to dances. Some of the guys would stay here for 6 months at a time and not go out.
Was there a bar in town?
No.
Was there enterprises at Lucerne?
Yes.
Operated separate from
they
the
had
line?
Beer parlor down there. That was the thing to do on Saturday night. Those guys would get on the bus and go down there and get all the beer they wanted.
I understand gambling was part of the life. Is that right?
I didn't really notice that myself.
What was the food like?
Very good. They had the best setup. The place that's now a laundry or something over in the end of the cookhouse there was the lunchroom. They just piled roast beef, everything you could think of out there, and you could make as big a lunch as you wanted.
But you made your own lunch.
You made your own lunch. If you're going on a hike, you go out there and make your own lunch.
Did you have your own hospital and doctor here?
Yes. They had, I guess they eventually fixed a hospital up there. But they had a doctor, and this couple that I told you about invited me to dinner. The gal became the nurse, and the guy was the geologist, and they lived here for 8 years. And they still, I still visit them in Seattle. So they, never have been to dinner. Are you going to ask a question?
What happened to the people on the line when the power shut off?
That didn't involve them very much. You see, they had their miner's lamps and so forth, and not much in the mine was run by electricity. Maybe some pumps were.
How many people would be up here at one time?
Well, all the bunkhouses be full, and I was kind of counting the rooms in the bunkhouse the other day, and there's about room for about 56 people, 56 guys, and all the bunkhouses were full. So I don't know how many bunkhouses there are, four
six.
Or five?
Six?
Six, yeah.
300?
Plus the main.
Yeah.
And the honeymoon height. So there was probably at least minimum 1,000 people here.
No, maybe 500.
Yeah, I think the other people who
have
come, you said it was 400 to 500.
Uh-huh.
That's,
you
know, four.
Okay.
I have two questions on my.
Okay.
One, they call it Railroad Creek. Is that just because of the tramway they had up the side of the hill?
Well, you know, I was wondering about that myself, and I've got a book that I bought today that was written as kind of a history of the place, and I noticed a little bit in there where the original guys tried to put a railroad up here. Mm-hmm. And I figured that maybe that's why they named it Railroad Creek. And the Forest Service wouldn't let them do it. Now, maybe that doesn't have anything to do with it, but...
That's my understanding, too, that Holden and whoever else was with them were surveyors for a railroad, looking for a way through, and that's how they came through the valley the first time.
Oh, is that so?
That's what I understood. And then that's when they spotted the copper. The
outcrop. Oh.
And that it got its name then because they were hoping that a railroad would come through here. But
they were seeking a railroad across the Cascades?
Yeah.
They were having a dead end down there at Lake Chelan, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Kind of checking out like the path for Stevens Pass or something like
that. Eventually they must have found it. This was an early trial. This was what, 1905 or? Quite early.
Well, 1896 he...
1896, yeah, way back.
Okay, and question number two. As far as, like, the tailings and that. Now,
I can just visualize like Railroad Creek. It was just running red, I'm sure, during the time they were mining, and it was probably even running into Lake Chelan itself and discoloring it. Is that correct?
Well, not while I was here.
Did they have a kind of a settling? I see that they've got kind of curbing like all around the tailing piles. I'm wondering if maybe they put up like a dike or something and settled it up.
But while I was still here, we had a very shallow one, but it was all diked up, and there was guys out there working on that with shovels by hand all the time, building up the outside, continually building it up, so that nothing got in the creek.
Seeing the pictures of the heavy machinery up there at the museum, was that all trucked up here, that heavy machinery?
Yes.
Seems like you couldn't get a truck.
Did you see where there's some ball mills and things like that?
Yeah, I just can't see how they hold that all up on trucks.
Yeah, they did. And then there was an incline railway in the mill. They hauled it up that to get it to its position.
And how about the concrete in that? Did they just crush the aggregate here?
You know, I was telling my wife I couldn't remember where in the world the aggregates came from.
It doesn't look like, I don't think this kind of aggregate here makes good
concrete. I can't remember where it came from, and there may be a borrow pit somewhere around, but I just don't remember that.
I would suspect they might have.
They had a lot of concrete in that mill.
Have you not been here since the 30s?
Well, I came up one time to visit my friend who was my classmate in school. He lived in one of the upper chalets, just one time. And I came through here after walking over from Darrington.
Was it kind of a shock? Was it quite different, or did it look?
No, everything looks the same. Really and truly, it's very gratifying to see how much the same things are. But to see all the homesite houses gone and Honeymoon Heights disappear.
What's the story on those? What happened to the mining village?
Well, I think that when the mine came in here, they had certain rules that they came in under. One of the things was that when they left, they were going to have to leave it as much like it was before as possible. And you notice they took the transmission line down along the lake. That's gone. That would have been nice to still have, but maybe it wouldn't be feasible to have, but they didn't leave any poles up. And they're right in trying to make the environment just the way it was before. It was a travesty, or not a travesty, but a privilege to come here and run that mine in Forest Service.
Do you think today that the National Forest would allow any mining like this again?
I bet you they wouldn't. I bet you they wouldn't. I never realized that it'd ever be that big a pile of tailings.
Sir, if the Lutherans hadn't taken us over, they'd have torn us down.
Yeah. That's what I think. They would bulldoze it down. That would have been terrible.
Did they have any kind of church services here if people were here?
Oh, sure.
They would have that in a big hall.
I don't remember where they had it, because I guess I didn't go. But anyway, I'm sure they did. I think they had it in the what you call the village.
Yeah.
So the center. What did you call that? What was it named when you were here?
Recreation hall.
If a married miner wanted to build a cabin up in the village, did the mill have a sawmill that they could purchase lumber from, or how
no.
was that handled?
They had to order it from Chelan. After the original work was done here, they took that sawmill away, and it didn't saw very good lumber anyway. Mostly rough stuff.
There must have been a lot of lumber hauled in.
Oh, you bet. Especially all the knotty pine and all the porch work and stuff, though, they went down the road here to the lodgepole grove down there and got it down there. It's all from right down there.
That hole that's up there at the top, is that the upper part where the machinery was, and did they drill shafts, tunnels, and then blast it up and brought their rock out that way?
The main portal is right at the level of the where the top of the mill is, the main portal. That's where all the ore came out. They hauled it out in trains, and I'm not familiar with just how they did mine it. I think they did open up some big caverns in there, all right.
I understand there's a place in there as big as a football field in there.
Probably.
Would that be, that wouldn't be the upper part, that would be from there on down, wouldn't it?
Probably. Straight on in, or...
The geologist who was here early in the summer said, first of all, they went up. They went up, and we were at the highest point you could see. That was the first thing they did, went that way. But then they went down. But I forget, somebody said how many miles of tunneling there is in there, in addition to the cavern. So they were over, at one time, when they were checking out near the end, they were over under Buckskin.
Yeah.
So they were checking out. The vein runs on a diagonal, slanted diagonal, from 25 Mile Creek way on up this way. And so they were checking out north and south of here within that vein to see if they could keep the mine going towards the end. So did they tunnel in, then blast it up so the stuff come on down, then they could haul it out?
I think that's what they did.
I think that's probably what they did. But they tunneled up. There are tunnels going up in different places.
They have what they call raises, where they're going up. I was in there watching them, and that's one of the hardest jobs in the world. Imagine yourself up in a tunnel 8x8 or 9x9 that's going up at a little bit of an angle, and you got to haul all the stuff to stand on up there. You got to haul your hoses up there, your drills, and stand there and push that machine.
Are you going to see if we can have guided tours up through there next year?
How was the safety like over at the mill?
Pardon?
How was the safety like over at the mill?
Very good, I think. Very good. There was, I don't remember any accidents, really.
Records we have is that there was about a death a year on the average over the 20 years, which apparently is amazing in Quincy.
Was the old Tacoma smelter that processed the concentrate?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, they hauled it by a railroad car over there in those big buckets.
Now these lodges, were they paneled? Were they pioneer here?
No. Celotex. You can see some of the Celotex in the closets. You know, look in the closet. And that must have been beat up pretty well by the time they put that nice, naughty plane on. Was it?
That's right.
But they had you had the basic shell. Well, I was going to tell you, we moved into the first bunkhouse Thanksgiving that year. And we all went out on Thanksgiving when some guys left the windows open. Darn if we didn't have a snowstorm, we had snow drifting inside. That was pretty fast though. They were just clearing the land in June, and they had the building up and going on Thanksgiving.
About 15 years ago, there was quite a collection of old cars on blocks down at Lucerne. Apparently some of the miners were able to get their own cars in here. And
they may have.
A few private automobiles. The mine museum shows pictures of them coming in on top of those ore buckets.
Is that so?
There weren't cars then in here when you were...
I don't remember. The survey gang had an old Model A. And that's one thing we had.
How did they heat the bunkhouses? You
know, in those days?
Yeah. Maybe they didn't.
I don't remember.
Maybe
I never worried about that, I guess.
Didn't they have big boilers in the center of town?
Maybe they did use steam.
Yeah.
Some of them still have these walls.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned your paycheck. Did you also get paid in company script sometimes?
No. They never did. We're forced to do that. They seem to have enough money in the pot in their bank for that.
What do they use the script for then?
I don't know anything about the script.
They show script up here.
Maybe early, very early on. You know.
There was a store, right?
Pardon?
There was a store in town?
Not any more than we have now. Well, maybe a little more, maybe a little Canvas. But all these miners and guys that had homes here, the Honeymoon Heights guys, had to place their order at Chelan. But I think the company brought them up on the barge, and there was no freight. But they and they also hauled it up here. So you had a big grocery bill at one shot. These guys, excuse me.
How long was this whole village sitting here then?
This building here?
The mine closed in what, 57 or 58?
This building would have probably been done in 1937. So, 1937 to now is how long this building has been here.
So like, how long was it until the mine closed down until the living took over? Was that like...
4 years or so, wasn't it?
Yeah. 57 to 61 is when we... given it, then somebody started living here, and people started coming in, forerunners, and that became the place. And in 62 was the first program under Lutheran auspices.
Had there been bad vandalism?
Yes.
There had?
Yes.
Didn't they have a caretaker here?
Apparently so, but I don't know if he was down with Cernmore or what, but it was not well protected. I saw terrible. But I was here in 61, and before I came, people told about the windows that were broken, the dishes that were thrown and just crashed, and just smashed, and I remember personally being up in a projection in the village center, and somebody had taken a baseball bat or something through the large projectors that they had.
Terrible.
Just bashed up. Mm-hmm. It was really pretty freaky. Linens and stuff left here too. Those were well cleaned out. Came up on Pikes or whatever else and cleaned up. Got themselves like, I imagine there's maybe a few motels that were started. I don't know.
I noticed in the letters down there that where they were negotiating, they said that they had stored the hospital equipment in Chelan. That's one thing they did smart. It sure would be nice to see the balance sheet, though, really help.
How much notice were the miners given that they were going to close?
I don't really know.
You ever heard of that?
No.
Now you mentioned that miners stayed here for up to 6 months. Did they serve their time here year after year with a period off for vacation? Or?
They had vacations, but I don't know, they just...
Just like regular employment.
Yeah.
They didn't get 6 months here and then 6 months
off. Oh, no. They just got 2 weeks off or something.
Elmer, isn't it? I thought that they just had notice one day and they shut the mine the next. That's what I heard.
I've heard a couple of versions of that story. I don't know. Nigel Adams, I think that's the book you're referring to, has written that up. It's available in the bookstore. We do get some different stories about it. I think the geologist, who certainly was part of management, said that there was more notice than that. That people really knew for maybe 2 to 3 weeks in advance. It had been coming because they started looking for more ore. You know, they had to find out, can we stay here? The prices of copper dropped drastically. Labor prices and freight prices went up drastically. So they were losing money.
A couple of people I had talked to were
kids in the schoolhouse, and maybe they would just have a perception that they were told by their parents one day and they were gone the next, because they do remember going to school and then they were gone the next day, loaded up, and they didn't even take time to pack up everything in their house. They just took what they could have on their in their hands and off they went.
I think the fact that they left fast is quite clear, is once you wanted to go, you wanted to get to the next job, if you were going to stay in mining especially. So I don't think there's any doubt about that. But whether the parents told the kids or not, or whatever the story was, I'm not sure.
There was an interesting, another interesting thing about this. This work that I described, the carpenters and all that work that was done around here, they had a lot of fellows working here. A lot of those guys came from Cooley Dam. They had just finished Cooley Dam. I call them Cooley Dam graduates. And that filled in good for them, just like you said, they moved to another job.
What's happened to the company after this mine closed down?
I don't know.
It's still going. The geologist is aware of, they still have one mine in Canada, and they have, I think, one in Idaho. It's a larger company. It's the Howe dot dot dot, whatever it is now, conglomerate or something like that. And he told some of the other, it's a diversified kind of company, but it still has some mining operations.
I'd like to describe what happened to one of my friends. He worked his way up in the mining part, mining engineering up there in the mining engineering office, to a pretty high spot, and he became kind of a fair-haired boy. All of a sudden, and I should preface this, he was living in the chalet at the very end of the road up here, in his family, and they said, we want you to move to New York, New York City. We're going to make you assistant to the manager or the president. And he had to uproot everything and move to New York, and he lived here for 20 years probably. Not 20 years, 15 years.
Did he survive in New York, or did he
visited him there, and he seemed to survive all right. But you know what they do, what happens though in a lot of cases? The company sold out. And when they sell out, they clean house. He lost his job. Mm-hmm. But he became a well-known mining expert, and he's still does consulting work and stuff. But he moved back to Colorado.
And what have you done since you left mining?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, I went to work for the Boeing Company. And I think that you can sense that once the mining operation gets and the milling operation gets going, it's pretty routine. And you can get kind of lonely up here. So I saw a chance to get out, so to speak. But I have no regrets for the time I spent. It's wonderful.
Were there deer around here?
Oh, yes.
Were there bear?
Yes. My brother came here and was going to go on a hike to Heart Lake. He got up there about a half a mile and he met a bear and her mother bear and her cubs. And he turned around, he never went.
There was no hunting at that time?
Oh, no. There was not supposed to be any hunting.
Bear steak tastes as good though, didn't it?
That Mirror Lake trip was a neat trip.
How far is it from that place?
Well, you can practically see the saddle up there. Just beyond that saddle, maybe a couple hundred yards is the lake.
About 2 miles, right?
No. maybe 3-4, something like that. But there's no trail.
Yeah, you push
wagon. That's Holden miles.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to get across Railroad Creek too.
We have people every once in a while who push wagon over here and into.
Oh, they all know about that.
Yeah, right. And fishing is still very good.
Is it?
Yeah. It's about
5 o'clock. Boy, you told me an hour.
There you go.
Very good.
Let's express our appreciation.